companions. We help you discover your many layers. You peel, you cry, you wake up with fresh eyes. Question life, question humanity, question society, but most of all, question yourself.
Yeah, hi, my name is Dan Boyden. I'm a theatre practitioner at my core, but also do a lot of work around designing and running arts-based projects, international arts-based projects, often with communities, but not solely with communities, working across different sectors. And I am the now co-director of a UK-based organisation called the Change Collective. And the Change Collective is a space for creative practitioners to come together to explore arts-based approaches to change in different contexts, different conditions. And I can talk to you a bit more about that. But yeah, really nice to connect. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. I'm really curious. What was your journey? What made you set up the Change Collective?
So around 10 years ago, there were quite few spaces in the UK for artists or creatives who were interested in social impact. And I was forum theatre is my kind of specialism. And I've done quite a bit of forum theatre in different places, and was also kind of seeing quite a lot of freelancers. So quite a lot of people who were off doing their thing in quite chaotic situations, often on their own. And there was two brilliant women called Charlotte and Chantelle. And I worked with one of them, and they had set up something called the Change Collective, which was essentially a space for people like me to come together. And what I was drawn to was this sense of being able to, I guess, connect with other practice. So whilst my background or specialism was definitely theatre based, and particularly around theatre of the oppressed, it felt like I was really interested in what could happen when I connected and learned from and spent time with people who had other practice and were coming with different perspectives and different experiences. And so it kind of, what was interesting about the Change Collective when it first started was that the vision was quite clearly defined by Charlotte and Chantelle. So there was a particular approach, there was a particular communities in mind and ways of working and doing bits of training. So it was very much, we were fitting in, I guess, or we were kind of subscribing, if you like, to this idea of what the Change Collective was for these two founders. And it was great. And I think that it was an interesting challenge because they, you know, life took over, and we talked a little bit before we started recording, but this idea of how do you sustain yourself financially? How do you sustain the motivation, the energy, particularly with a collective, particularly when there's the more people there are in that, the harder it is to move, I think, as one. And Charlotte became, I think, a midwife. Chantelle moved out of London. We were all based in London. And then the Change Collective kind of, the organization sort of slightly didn't fold, but it definitely felt a bit directionless because the two people who were steering the ship suddenly weren't there. But I think what was interesting was the relationships between the people within the collective was quite strong. I was a kind of a member, and so we went our sort of separate ways for a while. The organization was still there. And then I kept coming back to this idea of feeling like there was a real need for these kind of spaces. And I felt also at that time in the UK, it felt like there was more, maybe more interest or acceptance of this kind of socially engaged or participatory arts work. It felt like you know, it was less on the fringes. I remember doing a project in a schools in East London. We were literally working in the canteen, you know, and we were kind of, it was very much in the back room. And I guess then and it never will be necessarily, it's not glamorous work, but it was definitely felt like within the big arts institutions, so the big cultural institutions, you know, it felt like there was a move for this kind of work or this kind of approach from being just an outreach thing or just something which was, you know, there to tick a box in terms of engagement, to feeling like actually there was more interest in how arts, creativity can kind of sit in this more sort of social change or social development space. So I sort of put a call out and to people that I knew in my network, to some of the old members of the Change Collective, and I just sort of pitched it as I think it could be interesting to come together to see if we can reignite this collective or this group as a learning system. So as a kind of learning exchange, it felt like, and I what I was really interested in or keen on was that actually the process that we were going through in terms of connecting, building relationships, would be the process that would ultimately define what this thing was. So it started and there was an interest and an appetite, and it started quite slowly and quite organically. I remember we did a kind of retreat in the woods, at this kind of log cabin thing in the woods where we all, and it was amazing. It was wonderful. We had people from theatre, people from film, people who were producers or people who were interested, I guess, either they had a specific artistic practice or, interestingly, they were not necessarily solely from the arts. They were more creative practitioners, but who saw the value in arts-based approaches. So we had people who, you know, we had somebody who was a social worker, but she was really, really interested in and could see how arts and creativity could support and kind of add value and be interesting to what she was doing. That was about 5 years ago. So that, and then, you know, we didn't have any money. We haven't really still haven't got any money, but we didn't have any money. We've never had an office. So we've never had a physical space. And I've kind of been, I've been running it as the director. I think that what's been interesting is there's been a really natural development in terms of the work that we've been doing. It feels like we're really refining the offer. It feels like that's coming at a time where there feels like there's an increased need for spaces where we can come together to connect, to value differences, to think about empathy, think about understanding what the world looks like from somebody else's position. With the arts does that brilliantly. And also, I guess, spaces where, yeah, people come together and work across those differences. So, you know, whether that's different artistic practice, different sectors, different perspectives, different ideas, that feels really valuable. And I think what we're doing and have done over the last sort of 2 or 3 years is try to underpin the practical with some of the theories. So we've been interested in, I guess, understanding a little bit more about how change happens, thinking about what's happening outside the arts as well as within the arts space, and thinking about how maybe can we bring some of that, it's not quite academic rigor, but how can we bring some of that theory to be able to underpin some of what we're doing? Because I think that within, you know, different people, different audiences require different things. So sometimes, particularly I think when you're working with local government or business, actually to be able to have some kind of theoretical base to be able to to be able to articulate what it is and why it is that you're doing what you're doing, I think is useful. So that's a really long way of saying, I guess, what we're trying to do is come together around this shared question of how can we create a kind of collective learning system, and how do we do that in a way that feels useful and authentic and allows people within the organization to feel like they're contributing and also getting something from it. And it's constantly brilliant and also challenging. It's really interesting to think about how we organize ourselves. And we're just at a summit. We're doing something which we're kind of ambitiously calling a summit. And I think essentially we recognize that how we've been operating up until now has been great. And I think for us to move into a space or to almost kind of transition into this next phase as an organization, we really need to interrogate what we've been doing. We really need to kind of solidify that core, but also really think about how do we open up and connect with other people? How do we work a bit strategically whilst also remaining agile and really kind of honoring the process that we've been through up until now? And I think there is a real flexibility in terms of how we work. And that has been great. And so we're going through this kind of this 6 week or 8 week process now, where we're trying to, I guess, turn the mirror around on ourselves a little bit. So lots of the processes that we've been through with organizations or communities, we're trying to go through this kind of change process internally to be able to move into this next phase. Because I think, yeah, there's an appetite and there's a real ambition to be able to connect, I guess, a bit more meaningfully or formally, maybe not formally, but just to connect a bit more and bring the different pieces of the puzzle together. We're working with practitioners in the Middle East, in Beirut, Syrian artists, organizations in the Philippines. We're connected with collectives in Seoul and Korea. And it just feels like now is the time, partly because of where this last year, but also just there is this confidence, I guess, and this interest to be able to really start thinking about how do we bring those conversations together to be able to kind of increase our ability to have more of them, I guess. So it's an interesting time. So it feels like, yeah, it's really timely to have a conversation with you based in Singapore. And, you know, it feels like, yeah, we've got two of our kind of core members are in Spain. And it's been great seeing this last 12 months, being able to work really in a different way with them. So it feels like there is things are possible that maybe would have been harder a year ago. And we're just trying to work out how do we ride with that and how do we kind of work with that, I guess.
I think there's a real potential out there to pull the forces together and all these different networks, be it mine or iTechs or, you know, all these different collectives to really come together and question and form this summit if you plan to, you know, expand it and have partners. So we can talk about that later. Something that I'm sort of like reflecting on is that, so I was in the UK 2014 to 2018, and I've always been sort of drawn to this like social political agenda within the arts and using that to open up conversations. But it's the same, you know, that I back then didn't quite feel like there were the right spaces for it, and navigating institutions, that's always difficult because they've got their own agendas, and a lot of times that's also tied to publicity. And I just find it really exciting that the Change Collective started 10 years ago, which kind of coincides with that period of time. And also many other organizations that I observe around have also started within sort of like this time frame and period, which is really exciting stuff. I wonder if perhaps there's also like a sort of social political change that is warranting that to happen. And something that is really interesting, which is language and methodology. So I put myself in many really different spaces outside of the arts. And then I realized that even within the arts, right, socially engaged arts, community arts, it's such a niche on its own in terms of the processes, it's so different from, say, sculptures or paintings. And it's very, people who are outside of this field often don't understand what we're talking about. You know, when we talk about safe spaces, active listening, you know, for someone who has not been through that process, it's a bit like, what do you mean human-centered facilitation and empathy? You know, everyone facilitates in companies and workshops. What different is yours? You know, everyone's bored of these sort of meetings. And then I realized this thing, like when I try to communicate with people in business spaces, for example, they don't really understand me as much as I don't understand their business language. And then I realized, okay, wait, what is the common language that bridges, that can allow us to understand each other, that allows us to communicate a practice that is so process driven and experimental and organic, that doesn't have sort of like a fixed, I guess, structure of way of doing things or a certain outcome that you're going towards? Because, you know, you are listening, and in that process of listening, it means that you have to be open to take in what you've listened. And it's very difficult to convey that to businesses who are very KPI driven, you know, key performance indicators, like what is the data? What is the impact at the end of it? How many numbers, you know, how can you quantify all of these things and measure that? And I'm curious, like how, you know, this methodology that you are experimenting in the Change Collective, how do you get to that? How did you realize that that was important? And how does that help you in bridging that language with, be it the business sectors or funders or, you know, the more sort of KPI driven entities?
Yeah, I think it's that's a great question. And I think we are, as artists and as creatives, I think that there's a constant tension or often within the Change Collective, we talk about the balancing act. We talk about being able to decide on the right approach based on the conditions that you're operating in. And I think there's a brilliant friend and colleague, member of the Change Collective called Dan Smith, and he's big into systems theory and complexity theory. And he talks a lot about this idea of when things are calm and things are clear, then it's easier to perhaps apply a slightly more linear approach, you know? So actually when things are more chaotic or unstable or unpredictable, we need to be able to have that flexibility in terms of the approach. So that balance between control on the one hand and then flexibility, adaptability on the other. And I guess we are all, whether we're artists or whatever, we're all constantly on that tightrope, you know? So I think in terms of where we're at in the world at the moment, there feels like clearly the last 12 months, but just, you know, generally things are increasingly unstable and unpredictable, and changes is happening really, really rapidly. And there's a feeling maybe that we're not as in control as we should be or we could be. So I think that there's, we are working, one of the Change Collective projects that we're working on at the moment is called the Changemakers Academy, and it's with Guildhall and the Barbican, and it's a 6-week online course for creatives. So anybody kind of in the creative and cultural sector, but there's quite a few freelancers who are at the beginning of their sort of journey, but then there's also cultural, you know, senior managers, cultural leaders who have been within that the sector and kind of navigating that system for a long time, and I think are increasingly realizing that a lot of those big institutions that you're talking about, and a lot of those, whether it's cultural institutes or those bigger social systems, cultural systems, are not fit for purpose in a world that feels constantly like it's being really challenged, that people are being challenged, things are unstable and unpredictable. So I think that there is definitely even within those funders, the world of business, the world of what, you know, that there's traditionally maybe slightly more rigid, slightly more hierarchical spaces, there is, I think, an increasingly realization that actually, how do we how do we lean in to something which feels a bit more flexible, feels we are able to adapt, to be able to learn and to grow as we go. So this idea of the kind of KPIs and the 1 year, 3 year, 5 year plan is okay when things, when we can predict where we are going, when we feel like actually we have some level of certainty in terms of what the world might look like in a year or 3 years or 5 years. And at the moment, we just really don't. So there's something, I think there's an interesting moment for artists and creatives to be able to support that exploration of adaptability, flexibility, being able to, invite and bring in lots of different ways of doing things to be able to identify and choose the right way for people. I think within the Change Collective, that's also what we're trying to do, is just be open to the conversations that we're having, and to, and in all of those different situations, whether it's with organisations like the British Council, which are those bigger cultural institutes, or whether it's with individual artists and collectives, which are operating in particularly fragile or unstable environments. And I think that, we're just trying to continuously look for what's working, and trying to look for insights to be able to think about how we might be able to apply those, or share those, or introduce those in other different contexts as well. I think it's as much as we're seeing balancing acts, we're also going through our own balancing act as an organization, and just constantly trying to kind of investigate and interrogate where we fit on those different balance beams, I guess.
I'm currently sort of trying to reach businesses or social enterprises or even foundations that might be open to an experimental process, because I think what we can offer in the socially engaged process is the process itself, you know, where you have all these methodologies, or tools for improvisation, which really improvisation just means that you throw yourself into the unknown and then you figure things out on the spot, and you train yourself to be okay with uncertainty, which right now COVID has shown us that this is so relevant and important. But then when we look at the world from such a data-driven perspective, which is very left brain in the sense that, you know, you are looking at numbers, you're looking at data, you're trying to foolproof as much as you can so that you can make the fall as cushioned as possible. But then, you know, that side with creativity, with your intuition, with that sort of imagination, it's just being pushed down. And with the rise of tech, it feels like we are going more and more towards that data-driven world. And we are human beings who are complex with our emotions and our feelings, and we're constantly responding to what is happening in society and politics. But then when we look at business processes or the ways that we work with each other, you know, which organizations would be like, right, COVID happened, let's take a moment and pause, you know, let's share, how do you feel about it? How do you feel in this point in time? How do you feel in this moment? How can we feedback what we're sensing, what we're feeling, back into the ways that our companies function and work? Right, there is the climate crisis that is going to affect our younger generation. We need to do something. How can we understand what is needed for systems change? What is needed to tackle or deal with something that is as large as the climate crisis? How can our companies play a part in really actively and critically reflecting on our processes, our business models, what is working for people and planet, what's not working for the planet and the environment, how might we innovate and how might we do better? You know, that level of eco-consciousness and awareness, what happens if more companies actually adopted that instead of this profit maximizing perspective where I'm going to cut my costs. So cutting my costs means that I'm going to exploit this labor somewhere in developing countries, or that I, you know, I don't care about the planet because I need the natural resources to make the product that I need to make. So I'm going to destroy the forest because, well, everyone does that, you know, and there's nothing to even think about that. You know, that's the sort of old traditional mindset where the needs of human beings, it's placed above everything else. But we now learn that our ecosystem is so interlinked and intertwined that we cannot look at our own growth and welfare without looking at the welfare of the planet and animals and the plants and the ecosystem. But then on a business level, we have not that it's not reached. We've not reached that point of critical awareness, inquiry, understanding, or even have the courage to start that interrogation process, because so much is at stake. It's people's jobs at stake, which is livelihoods that companies are responsible for. It's whether or not the company can stay alive with all of these changes. And it also comes with big sacrifice. And I think the more a company or someone is comfortable and benefiting from this system, the more they want things to go back to normal, you know, business as usual. But if it's not working and it's going to affect people disproportionately, especially the people who have it the worst, hit the hardest, are the poorest, then collectively, what we're looking at is also a fundamental need for some sacrifice at some point. And what I'm really excited about is, you know, which companies are open enough, experimental enough to bring in artists who are asking these questions, to be questioning these things alongside them and innovating and finding creative ways to come up with solutions or collaborate or, you know, figure out what are some of the potential opportunities for a different kind of growth, a different kind of value or service that we're providing that isn't going to be like a materials-based consumption goods.
Yeah, and I think that that's the million-dollar question, I guess. And as you see, you know, you hit the nail on the head in terms of those kind of competing needs. And I think that there is a resistance and there is a wariness to take that on. And I think there is the role that the artist or the creative has to also be able to show the human impact or consequences of some of the decisions that are being made. And so there's a lot of the forum theatre work that I used to do was around being able to invite people into conversations and into a dialogue around solutions. There's interesting, there's a kind of critique, I guess, of forum is this idea of it, that it focuses very much on the individual and maybe gives less acknowledgement or focus on the kind of that systemic changes and how we explore those, some of the interconnection and some of the shade, I guess, between the oppressed and the oppressor. So that's probably another podcast. But I think that there is, particularly around some of those huge, big issues which seem impenetrable and seem big and impersonal, there's something about how do we humanize some of these challenges? How do we bring the kind of individual into the conversation? Because I think it's really easy to externalize. It's really easy to look at it, particularly around climate and some of those big environmental challenges, that it feels like it's something out there. But there's something in terms of this particular approach or the way in which we're talking around this kind of human-centered way of really being able to ground in the moment, ground in yourself, ground in what's happening, and kind of placing yourself within some of these bigger conversations or bigger challenges, whether it's social or political or environmental, or, you know, and again, exploring the kind of, like you said, the intersection between all of them. But there's something that is, yeah, I think for those, to be able to have those big shifts in terms of organizational culture or in terms of business, or in terms of, I think there has to be an interesting there's something about accountability, and there's something about humanizing the problem, and there's something about really allowing people to connect a bit more closely with some of these issues on a kind of personal level. And I think this kind of way of using arts, way of working with people through this kind of collaborative artistic process allows that to happen. And I think that there is also something that there's obviously the kind of the strength in numbers, this idea of, I work on a big project program with the British Council called Active Citizens, and it's very much about locally led, locally engaged social action that is happening through partner organizations, very much at a community level. And this idea of these kind of networks, whether it's local, regional, global networks, the program has worked with over 250,000 active citizens in its 10 years. So there is something, even again, with these big issues around some of these social challenges that we're seeing, or issues around climate change or climate justice, this idea of actually, we need to begin somewhere. We need to start somewhere. And we start small, but that by connecting the dots and by being able to really think about how we grow and nourish these networks, that I think is when you start to see bigger ripples. You start to see change happening at different places within the system. So yeah, I think it's a real tension. It's this idea of when we're taking on some of these big business, big, you know, the capitalist machine, actually there is a real risk that individual artists or you know, creatives can feel like it's too big. But there is a kind of something, I think, in terms of being able to get into the belly of the beast, to really work and to kind of create and to collaborate and to start thinking about, okay, how do we work with people to be able to explore the human impact and human consequences, and also the emotional impact of some of these bigger issues that we're looking at.
I guess something that has been on my mind, so I'm kind of like speaking to people who have been in the corporate space working for decades, and then suddenly COVID hit, and you know, companies have closed down, people have lost their jobs, and then we had this conversation about, you know, I've worked in the corporate world for 10, 20, 30 years. Now I've stopped in my life, and I look back and I don't know what I'm doing. And a lot of times people make the decisions to work in a certain company or in a certain job scope because of like the social definition of what a career should be, what a career means, how much you should be earning, what kind of level of comfort you should be giving to your family. And especially in a country like Singapore, post-independence, being a fairly young country, my parents' generation and grandparents' generation really had it rough. They knew what poverty was like, and they don't want their kids to experience the same thing. So then, you know, for a lot of people, it's like, it's the decision of, I have to make this sacrifice because, you know, I prioritize my family, and that is a worthy sacrifice to make. And that's sort of the value system. And I'm kind of like thinking of the larger perspective, because I mean, there was a point in my life where I felt the rage, I felt the frustration, I felt the disappointment in the world for not doing enough about the climate crisis. And then now really listening to the people around me who have been in the corporate space, who, you know, I guess are also being, who were part of this big machine that's pushing forward capitalism and whatever that it stands for, but then not necessarily understanding or realizing that they are a part of this system. But from their sort of perspective on a personal level, on a micro level, they are still doing the best that they can for their family. And a lot of people probably don't see beyond that. And then when we talk about something as big as the climate crisis or something like systems change, what is that thing that is going to help people act not out of scarcity, not out of, you know, a need to fulfill their basic needs, but, you know, something on a higher level of, I guess, awareness or consciousness, whatever the term might be, to look at things from a macro perspective and want to contribute to a larger society or a larger whole, you know, what is it in there that could help with that perspective shift, when actually to understand things on a deep enough level and to understand the actions that's needed to change is also a pretty long and arduous process. So then I guess, you know, what when we look at where we are right now, 2021, with a pandemic, with a climate crisis looming over, with people who are out of jobs, who are also thinking, you know, how am I going to survive? How am I going to put food on my table for the next meal for my family? There is no right or wrong, but it's a collective action that is needed to be taken. So then how, what next?
Yeah, that's a big one. I think if we nail that, if we get that answer right, then we will be in a good position. It's really challenging, and I think that's it. There is no one size or no one approach. And I think that it feels like to be able to think about what's the tools in your toolbox is useful, and to be able to think about again deciding on the approach based on the reality that you find yourself in, to be able to again be flexible in terms of the approach you take, and to really, again, we talked about earlier on about this idea of listening. I think it's really important just we listen to what's working. We try and listen and learn from what's working in different places. We understand when we might need to raise our voices a bit more loudly, or think about different ways in which we communicate a message. But yeah, I think that there is, it's such a big challenge. And I think that there is also something you said about the kind of scarcity. The flip side of that is this abundance theory, or this idea of how do we build from what is working, and how do we try to identify what we have, even if it feels like not a huge amount is working, or we don't have a huge amount, you know. And I think that there is something interesting to be thinking about how this idea of collective action or collective responsibility, I guess, being able to start from somewhere and build up. Often the weight of some of these challenges and some of the things that are out there can feel so heavy. But if we can begin to, I guess, identify, start small, start somewhere, and start really thinking about how we bring and connect and bring those different ideas together, that's, I think, how we begin to feel like there is more hope and more solidarity and more chance of being able to move in the right direction. And I think you know you said it, that again there's a tension between the time that it will take in terms of all of this, in terms of the work and the relationships, and the fact that there isn't a huge amount of time. If you listen to many of the climate experts, particularly around that issue, so yeah, I think it has to be about starting small, starting somewhere, learning and growing this idea of kind of, okay, if actually we are constantly building into whatever it is that we're doing, we're building in processes by which we can learn and we can grow and we can iterate and we can continue to do that I think will allow us to hopefully take some of it on.
Continuing on that, something I'm very passionate about, it's also artists' livelihoods. How can artists and sort of creative practitioners who are in this space, who want to use their art for social impact, social good, be able to thrive in a system that fundamentally doesn't really want them to thrive? Because we're asking all these questions that, you know, the biggest takers of the economy don't really want us asking. And I think now with COVID as well, something that I want to reflect on, it's also, you know, if you could give an advice or suggestion to people, artists who are maybe on their own or not connected or isolated because of this current situation, how might they organize themselves get together with people, to really come together, to collaborate, or to have conversations, or to be able to be there to support each other. Because I feel like, for me also reflecting on my journey, it's been quite a lonely journey on many levels. A lot of the times when, you know, everyone is so busy trying to, you know, get work to pay the bills, or, you know, all these other projects that's going on, and then suddenly when it comes to really collaborating to make stuff, to make work, to reflect on things, it's so difficult to get that sort of commitment and that level of, you know, contact. And I mean we all know that the power of the collective, of coming together, there is so much more than just what we can learn from each other, but it's also a system and network of support. And perhaps in a time like COVID, it might feel easy to forget that, when we are all sort of struggling in many different ways, and probably also with mental health. And, you know, what would you say to others out there who are concerned, who care about the environment, who care about the world, who care about people, who care about, you know, inequalities and discrimination and racism or sexism, you know, all of the weight of what is happening in the world and these issues and the oppression? How would you suggest them to get together and support each other?
I think that it's, it's a increasingly competitive, it's hyper-competitive time for everyone. And that goes for artists and people in the cultural sector. And I think that it's a time where we need to be, we need to be generous. We need to be generous with our energy, and with our time, with our heart, with our ideas. It feels like now is the time, if we can reach out to other people, and if we can engage people in some kind of dialogue where we're willing to kind of share what's happening for us, but also open to learning what's happening for them. That there is, that foundation. We have to build that foundation, and because I think when it's going to be increasingly difficult to survive on handouts, and I think there needs to be a moment where we really come together. And again, I think what is possible to be able to think about coming together across some of those physical boundaries, being able to think about how do we really reach out, and how do we learn from people? How do we feel supported and nourished by other people who are A, going through similar situations, but also B, might have useful ideas and approaches and strategies to be able to deal with some of the things which is similar to what we're going through. And I think that there is, although things are competitive and although I guess maybe funding is harder to come by, I also feel like there is a shift, like I was talking about right at the beginning. There is this shift, there's an opening, there's an increased perceived value in the work that we're doing. And I think ultimately, whilst that might be slightly longer term, there might be something that we need to do to steady the ship, which might be a bit more around kind of survival, day by day, and month by month. I think if we can also begin to start looking a bit further down the line, and thinking about what might some of the skills that we have and some of the approach that we're taking, how could that be useful for all of us and for society, as we move into beginning to get our head around what things look like over the next chapter. And I think that there are, whether it's from business or from funders, there is an increased appetite and interest to understand, to bring in this kind of work, to be able to support process as much as product. There's an immediate short term need to do whatever we can to get through to the next bit. And then I think that there is something around being able to really, yeah, work together to strategize, to come up with some ideas that respond to needs that will be there. And I think increasingly there will be needs that this kind of artistic practice can respond to and build on.
It's a sort of like closure ending to every podcast episode. I ask this question, what is the one thing that someone can do to create change in this world?
I think the one thing that we can do is to be open to understanding what keeps the fire burning in our bellies. There's, I think if we connect with that, and if we understand what gives us that energy or that passion, then I think that will sustain whatever it is that we do and wherever it is that we go. I think that there's, and that's a, you know, that's an easy thing to say, but it's a much harder thing to realize or to really get to the bottom of. But I think if we can work out what it is that is the thing that really drives us, and work on understanding more about how we can access that more often, how we can do more of that, then I think that will be the thing that ultimately sustains us and will be the thing that creates that change at all of those different levels. Because I think essentially, and it sounds like it's a cliche, but I think there's a, you know, if we can operate from a place which is authentic and true and real in us, then actually there's that's what we carry and we take out into the world. So there's something about understanding about right now what that is for me, and how do I use that to be able to inform the choices I make and to be able to give me the confidence to be able to move in the direction I want to move. And then also, if it feels like there are things which are blocking, then that's also where the energy goes. So if there are, you know, it's, I fully recognize that for, you know, a white man living in London, that's an easy thing to say. Whereas for some people to be able to acknowledge the things that they are passionate, that drive them, that give them the fire in the belly, is one thing, but then to be able to operate and live by that is very different. So yeah, I think it's a constant search to find that drive, and then it's about aligning that with how you move through the world with it.
Thank you. I was gonna like ask, what if people don't have that fire burning in their belly? which you kind of addressed towards the end. And yeah, I've been sort of like reflecting on, you know, how the passion economy, so people who are passionate, if they do the things that they love and they offer that as a service for people to learn from them, or I don't know, to be a part of their process, then, you know, fire catches fire. So your passion, someone else would catch on it and be inspired and find that. And that would collectively, you know, improve the well-being of everyone. I sort of like wrote an article on it just earlier today, and sort of like reflecting on if this sort of materials consumption based economy is not serving us anymore, there is no point creating more businesses to sell more stuff, even if there is a market that is untapped yet, because you are still going to be extracting natural resources from cotton field somewhere, or, you know, some sort of precious metal from somewhere else, and destroy the environment in the process of trying to get and extract those materials. And the fact is that we don't need more stuff, you know, we have what we need. And it's just a desire that the advertisements are selling to people that you need to buy, but we don't need all these things. And if frugality and non-consumption is going to help the climate, then what is going to keep jobs alive and available would be on things that are really related to your personal growth and development. You know, what is it that you love? What is it that you care about? What is it that you are passionate about? What keeps you content and happy and alive every day? And if we can reach that state of awareness, consciousness, and drive and motivation, and also be willing to support each other in our passion projects. So instead of spending money on clothes or, you know, all these things that you don't actually need anymore, then why not just, you know, be infected by someone else's passion and laughter and community, be part of that, support that, and then, you know, at some point in your life, create that for yourself and offer that to other people. Wouldn't that be a much healthier looking, better society than what we have now, which, you know, are these salespeople that are selling stuff constantly to us everywhere, bombarding advertisements that you don't really want to see, and then trying to make these advertisements look cool and have a higher engagement rate? What happens if the world gets to reach that stage? You know, like how much more beautiful that would be.
Yeah, that's a beautiful way of describing it. And I think that the challenge is to find the strategies to be able to deal with people who won't see the world like that, because I think that they're and that is the constant that's where the constant work is, I think, because yeah, the way that you describe that, I mean, who can argue with that? But there's lots of people who will. And I think that the more that we can do to be able to, yeah, strategize, to be able to support each other, to feel confident, to be able to take on some of those more less supportive or encouraging ways of looking at the world, the better. So I think that, yeah, I think that I totally agree. And I think that there's work to be done to be able to really feel like we can hold your head up high to be able to take on some of the people who don't see it like that.
I'm going to end off with a super random question. So the podcast is called Onions Talk. So what is that one dish with onions that you love?
Yeah, that's a good question. I've not really thought so much about my onion cuisine. I mean, I like pickled onion crisps. I wouldn't say that was a full meal, but I like a good pickled onion crisp. The jury is still out as to whether onions should be in hot dogs. I know some people have. There's lots of people talk about important things. That's one of the important things that people talk about. For me, I don't think onions should be in hot dogs, but there is, I'm open to being convinced otherwise. But I do you know what? A nice, simple tomato, onion, and maybe like a mozzarella cheese salad. I'd be happy with that. And I would eat that for starter, main course, and dessert.
Amazing. What a serious conversation. Yeah. That's important. Onions are important.
Exactly. We've done climate, we've done systems change, and we've done
covered onions.
Yeah.
Thank you, Dan.
Thank you.
Hello Onions Talk listeners, thank you so much for listening. If you liked what you heard, it would really help if you can leave a review on iTunes or like us on Facebook. Otherwise, subscribe and share it with people whom you think will enjoy this. Special thanks to Andrea for the music. Catch you next episode.